everybody. Oh. Welcome to episode 99 of the Weekly Wind Down. I am Jackie D, the literary lesbian.
I'm Stacy, the new age old school mom.
I'm Stacy, the political princess.
And I'm Erin, the geeky gal pal.
Stace, you're crushing the intro. It only took you fucking 99 episodes to figure it out, but you finally found your right tone. Nailing it. You're crushing it. All right. Tonight, I am drinking the most ridiculous wine I could find. It's called Gentleman's Collection. And it's Guide to Chivalry and Integrity. And rule number 2 on it says, forego frills. A gentleman does not over adorn his wardrobe with flair. His singularity cannot be expressed with a necktie. If a singularity cannot be expressed with a necktie, a pocket square, or wristwatch, it often needn't be expressed at all.
Whoa.
Yeah. Oh, if this is not the most condescending bullshit that I've So on the back it says, if ever there was a gentleman of the winemaking world, it was Dr. Henry Lindman. He knew a thing or two about living a fine life, so you would be wise to pay attention. In 1843, Dr. Henry Lindman, an upstanding man of formidable character, started his own winery. In doing so, he set his sights on civilizing a hard-drinking colony nation onto more gentlemanly pursuits, such as enjoyment of a fine drop. The long tradition continues today with this batch of perfectly blended red wine, rich in black fruits, and long aromatic bourbon oak finish, a fine drop by anyone's standards. And I gotta say, I was like getting ready to be like, fucking patriarchy, blah, blah, blah. But I'll tell you what, if all patriarchy tasted like this, I'd be much more open to the idea of it because it's damn good.
It tastes like shit normally.
I am drinking another Costco wine I got. It's called San Antonio Winery's Cardinale with an E at the end.
Cardinale.
I didn't realize it says sweet red in like little tiny letters at the bottom, and it's like syrup, like
ew.
Real. I don't want to say it's bad. I'm sure somebody out there likes really sweet wines. I'm not gonna say it's bad. It's not something I would drink, and it tastes like, you know, when you get the frozen cans of juice and you make your own juice, it tastes like the grape Welch's of that, and you didn't add enough water. That's exactly what it tastes like.
Dump it. Yeah, get a different one.
That is not good.
You should add some club soda and make yourself a spritzer.
Oh, there you go. Get some 7-Up. Yeah. But you can only say spritzer like spritzer.
Spritzer. Like it. Okay, I am not having rosé tonight.
Hold on.
Gasp.
Yeah, world. Watch out. So I am drinking this Substance Cab Sauv. And it's, I don't know if you guys have seen it, the label, like it looks like an element. So it has like the little C and the S, which I thought standard. Oh my God, stood for Cab Sauv.
But that lady brain of yours just.
Oh, I'm so stupid.
Can't science.
No. My brain's full of makeup. 2 + 2 = mascara. So I thought it stood for Cab Sauv, but it doesn't. It stands for Charles Smith. Apparently that's a winemaker. Anyways, the tasting notes. Pretty funny. Says opaque, deep, dark, and dense. Yeah, this Cabernet Sauvignon has an astounding depth and color and flavor. Blackberry, black plum cigar box.
Cigar box?
Silky smooth and continuing long with pencil lead and wet earth.
Oh,
with
my
a finish that says WTF. Okay, look that one up. Tremendous.
What the hell?
I don't know.
It's like the guy was writing the notes looking around his office desk, and he's like, what can I, cigar box,
Right after that, he sent an email to his boss that said, I fucking quit.
That's my favorite part. Also, that this is, their world headquarters are in Walla Walla, Washington.
That's a real place.
I know, but it sounds so funny. Walla Walla, Washington.
It's kind of lazy, though. You're like, Walla Walla, I don't know, fucking Walla Walla. Walla.
Whatever, who cares?
You can't just have one Walla.
That sounds stupid. Obviously.
Erin?
I am drinking Grey Rock Sauvignon Blanc, and it's from Marlboro. I do not really like California. I know. I'm sorry. God, I knew that was going to get something. God, how did I?
Aaron's off the podcast.
I know. I'm sorry. Done. Bye, guys. It's been real. Oh, shit. So anyways, the back of this is, you know, I mean, it's lame, but I'll read it, whatever. Ancient exposed riverbeds in Marlboro contain a type of gray rock known to Mayaria as Onewa. That sounds like something from, like, Pandora. I don't know. These river plains are home to our vineyards, producing wines with satisfying ripe fruit flavors, strength of character, and refreshingly restrained acidity. Rich tropical fruit, juicy grapefruit, and gooseberry flavors with a crisp finish.
Goose dingleberries.
Well, you know, that's, I mean, sure, what the hell. I am, it says, obviously, you got to drink it cold because you should, blah, 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 whatever. I'm drinking it on a wonderfully aged Death Star ice mold. It's delicious. I'm digging it so far. We'll see what it's like at the end of the bottle.
It's always better at the end of the bottle. Except every time Stacey takes a sip, you can tell it's not going to be better by the end of the bottle.
Right? I'm going to power through, but geez.
Why don't you just dump it? Drink it really fast. I know you have another bottle in your house.
Do you have ice in it? Right?
No. Oh, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll put some ice cubes in it. The only thing I have in the fridge right now is like
down a little.
Cooks champagne or something.
Oh, like, dump that in.
That. Yeah, mix them together.
Fuck it. I mean, can it get worse?
No, it can't.
I don't think I mentioned mine is good.
Yeah, mine's good too.
Super smooth. I am happy with this. I mean, it sure doesn't taste like pencil lead or cigar, whatever. But
I know. What is that cigar box like? If you dump this fine vintage into a shoe and drink it slowly, like what? Like a gym shoe or like a boot? Like what are
it's
what are
be
we
a loafer. It's a loafer, be a right? Loafer to get right. Spikes. Yeah.
When I think of cigar boxes, I think of like when I think of a cigar, and then I think of like when it's done being smoked, and it's just like sitting there, and it smells like old man saliva.
Yeah.
And I just handle it. So yeah. I don't really have. And it's tasting good for you because I feel like it's going to taste like ass.
You smelled a lot of old man saliva?
Well, my stepdad used to smoke
and
cigars.
And he drooled on you?
No, but he would like smoke a cigar and then he would leave it in the ashtray and then you'd go and sit down next to it and you'd be like, ugh, that thing smells like shit. Of course, I don't think I said shit when I was 12. I may have.
Maybe. Probably.
All right, so today we're going to go through some listener questions. We're not going to say the names just because these are kind of personal. So you know who you are, and if you're questioning it, it probably applies to you. So the first one is, my partner and I have been together for a long time. We're getting married later this year. I made a huge mistake and cheated on her when I was on vacation early on in our relationship. I have never done it again, but it has weighed heavily on me. Should I tell her before we get married?
My answer is obviously. I feel like if it's weighed heavily on you just from dating, that being married, it's going to weigh on you even more. And I mean, if you plan on being married for the rest of your life, that's like a burden you're going to carry around. Just tell the person. Like, come clean, admit it, work through it. Like, if they break up with you for it, like it is what it is, but you have to come clean. It's if you get married with that weighing on your mind, like you're always going to think about it every time you fight or like get drunk or like whatever it's going to be in the back of your mind that it could come out. You know what I mean? So I think you have to tell her.
Stacey.
Yeah, I agree. Here's the thing. I think if you have, maybe my answer would be slightly different if you hadn't said that it's been weighing on you heavily. If you were like, I've come to terms with it and it's not a big deal and we weren't that serious, whatever. But this is just going to eat away at you for such a long time. And I feel like starting your marriage out on that, like having this kind of secret is probably not the greatest thing in the world. You know, and I think you owe it to your partner to be honest and give her the opportunity to say whether or not she wants to marry you knowing that information. But the fact that you said that, you know, it's been weighing on you heavily, I just think that's going to, obviously it's a burden on you, but I feel like that burden and that like that cross to bear is going to bleed into other situations. And so you're going to end it up, like you're going to end up taking it out on her in ways that you wouldn't expect, in ways that she probably doesn't deserve, because you're feeling bad. Like you're going to overcompensate. At least that's my experience. So yeah, I think you should tell her, and that sucks. I'm sorry.
So I originally, when I read the question, my first instinct was no.
Right.
God, no. I was like, do not tell her like you've held it in this long. Fucking put some more dirt on top of it.
Bury that shit like, deep inside and drink deep, like the rest of us, you dumbass.
The grave, man. But then I started thinking about like, what if I were in your situation and I had that secret like eating me alive, and I would absolutely have to break down and tell, because I think that in order to build any sort of relationship, A, you have to have communication, and B, you absolutely 100% need to be honest with each other. And at this point in time, if you literally want to continue going forward with this person for the rest of your life, for as long as you both shall live, then you need to get that out there. I really think it's important. I seriously though, at first I was like, no, don't fucking do it. Just fucking don't do it.
That was my first reaction too. Like, no.
Right. Like danger. Don't do it. But at the end of the day, like, you know, they said like, if you break up, like it's not meant to be then. Like, but if it is meant to be, you guys will work through it and it'll be even better at the end, because look at where you are now.
So a few things. One, you need to be prepared, and we only have very limited information. So you need to be prepared for the fact that she may be more mad that you kept this from her for a number of years than if you had done something you wish you wouldn't have at the beginning of your relationship. Secondly, because I don't know if you'd even had like were exclusive conversation by then. I assume you were early, really early, because you weren't on a vacation together. I can't tell you what I think you should do. I could tell you what I would want if I was in her position, and it's actually not going to be what these three said. I wouldn't want to know. The reason being, if it happened that early on and we're good now, and like, I have been cheated on, so I have my own shit that's all mixed up in this that's like not healthy, and I'm trying not to put it on you, but I wouldn't be able to get over it, and I would hate to think of my life without my wife if she had made a huge mistake really early in our relationship that no longer pertained to us. And also, it's kind of like, do you need to tell her to relieve yourself, or are you doing it for her benefit? So, if you're doing it for yourself, I mean, I don't know if that's fair or not, but when I talked to Lex about it, she said, but if you don't tell her, you're taking that choice away from her. And now you have all the information and she doesn't, and you're entering into this like long-term commitment, and you're kind of in a power position because you know something she doesn't. So there's, and again, we don't have enough really information to go on. Like, was it a one night stand? Was it someone you knew that you're still in contact with? Cause those are very different things. Like if this was a friend of yours and you still know the person, that's a whole different element of this than you were in Vegas or wherever, hooked up with some random person and you've never talked to them again, never seen them again, or whatever. I think.
And it's like, you hadn't had that conversation about whether or not you're excluded at that point. Yeah.
Yeah.
You hadn't had that conversation and it was a one night stand and you don't, that's probably.
If you decide to tell her though, I think you need to think long and hard about the reasons why you kept it from her for so long, and include that in your explanation as to why you did this. Because that, if this really is what it is on the surface and it was a one-time thing, you never seen her again, whatever, that's going to be more hurtful to her probably than the actual act itself that happened several years ago. So, and I would also say, you need to pick a good time to have this discussion with her and not let it come out in a fight or
the night before the wedding
or whatever. Yeah. So like I said, my own personal shit says if I was your partner, I wouldn't want to know at this point, just because if you say it's never happened again and it meant nothing and whatever, I don't want to have to go through trying to fix a relationship that is otherwise good for a mistake you made. At that point, you're just trying to clear your conscience. You're not doing it for me. So that's my personal take on it. But like I said, I've gone through my own shit. So.
Well, and I think too.
So sorry, we're no help.
Right. That's funny. I was gonna say too, like, and if you do decide that this is something you need to share, because again, like for me, when I feel guilty about things or things happen, like that weighs on me so heavily that it affects other things and it spills out all over the place. But make sure you come armed with that information. I think anytime you're gonna have a difficult discussion with somebody, you need to, you know, you need to have a clear plan of what you're gonna say and how you're gonna say it, and include details like why you waited so long to say it, and you know, we weren't exclusive and I just want to be honest with you, and you know, obviously it wasn't fair of me to do at the time, but we've matured and our relationship, you know, has grown further and is more, you know, obviously we're getting married, that's a whole different level of commitment. And so I think it's important to give all the details, not just, you know, I'm so sorry. Like, no, like explain. I think if you can let other people know what space you're in when things like that happen, and you can kind of explain your thought process and sort of where you're living, it helps a little bit with the other person to try and get them to understand.
And the only other thing I would say, and then we're going to move on to the next one, is you need to then give her space to feel whatever it is she's going to feel. Yeah. And it may be anger, and that needs to happen for as long as it happens. And she may have a million questions that you have to answer a million times in a million different ways. And you need to let that happen. Also, you're opening yourself up right now to the possibility of your relationship ending. And if you really want this relationship to work, you have to let her feel and get through this however she needs to get through it. And it may involve yelling and crying and not wanting to talk to you for a while. And that's going to have to be okay.
Which I think
my answer. Don't do it.
Somebody were to come in and say, listen, like, I love you so much. I really want us to be open and honest. And I'm bringing you this information knowing that it could mean the end of our relationship, but I'd rather have that happen and you be okay with that decision than for you to not have this piece of information.
I think it's important. Like, yes, you need to like say what happened and be honest, but I also think it's very important that you don't go into the gross details, even if she asks. So right. When she's like, what was she wearing? Did she wear lingerie? Did she kiss better than me? Did she do these things? I think that that's just torture on her part that she's going to, if you guys end up working it out, that's something she's going to think about 5 years down the road and hurt all over again for. So I think that you need to give her the details of this is what happened. This is when, this is why, I'm sorry. But when she's like, was she wearing like sexy lingerie? Like, was she doing? I think you need to figure out a way to play off the I don't remember card just to spare her feelings. Because I think that stuff she could really obsess over. And like, was she skinnier than me? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then 5 years down the road, when your sex life tapers out, she's going to be like, is it because I gained a little bit of weight? Oh my God, that girl was thinner than, you know what I mean?
Yep.
A girl can really obsess over some real messed up detail.
I'm laughing because you're so right.
You have to, I mean, say that you don't remember, say that that wasn't
say
important.
Say you were drunk.
Say you're whatever you need to say so to not have to give out.
So there are details. Little white lies, I think, in this situation that are totally okay. I agree with you, Stacey. Like, you were so drunk, you don't remember. You just got caught up. Like, you weren't, you couldn't have driven. You couldn't have made any rational decisions at that point. You don't remember the details. It wasn't memorable. It wasn't significant.
No.
But then at the same time, like, if you're going to tell a truth and then follow it up with 87 lies.
No, I think it's like, okay. I think the white lie, because it's about the act. I think the white lies are not to protect you. They're to, as much culpability as you can take without giving details that the other person is going to stress out and feel bad over.
I wouldn't run with the I was drunk thing, because that's not an excuse. I've been drunk plenty of times and successfully not cheated on my significant other.
Not for why you've made
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't remember.
Especially, you know, what was her last name? Because you know what? I don't remember. Facebook stalker. I never even do it.
But I'm just saying, I think the drunk
shit out of that girl.
There's a lot of stuff that I've done that I don't remember because I was drunk. There's not a whole lot of things I don't remember that I was sober for.
Okay. We can do this all night. So And
I'll be drunk. I won't remember.
Hey. All right. So the next one is, I'm going home for the summer from college. It's going to be a huge adjustment as my parents are very, very Republican and very religious. We have a don't discuss it understanding about my sexuality. I'm tired of having to pretend to be someone I'm not around them. I'm tired of having to keep my political beliefs to myself. And I'm tired of them telling family and friends that I'm single because I'm just waiting for the right guy. I'm not single and I haven't been for the last 3 years. This is the last summer before graduating and I'm dreading it. Should I try to find a job near my college in San Diego or go home like they expect me too in Missouri? I know they'll be disappointed if I stay, but I'm practically having panic attacks at the thoughts of going home.
Don't do it. Don't go home. Stay in San Diego. Live your life. Be true to yourself. Live your truth. And I think be honest with them. Like share that information. Like I shouldn't have to lie about who I am. We can believe different things and that's totally okay. You can, two truths can be, they can be truths at the same time, right? Like we talk about that a lot. Like, they cannot agree with your lifestyle and still love you. Or they could grow a little and be accepting. But I think if the only reason that you would be going back home is just because they're expecting you to, then don't do it. Find a job. If it's your, but summer before your senior year, most people don't go home anyways. I don't think you should have to pretend to be somebody that you're not just to make your parents more comfortable. And I don't think you should have to lie about it. So, again, I've never been in that position before, but I feel like this is an opportunity for them to learn and for them to grow. And so they either need to get with it or, be okay. I would assume it's probably difficult for them too. So maybe baby steps of like, hey, I'm not going to come home because I can't pretend to be somebody I'm not anymore. So, not going to hide things. I'm going to be who I am and however, whatever they need, from you to make them, not to make them okay with it, but like, hey, we're not going to lie about this anymore. So what can I do to give you guys more information so you're understanding this a little bit more? Maybe it doesn't need to be about politics. Maybe that's the thing that can sort of take a back seat, that maybe you just don't bring politics up very often, but you shouldn't have to lie about being single and waiting for the right guy. And that's dumb. Don't do that. Be you.
Erin?
I agree. I honestly, my biggest thing out of that entire question was the fact that the person is having anxiety attacks. Just the very thought of something is causing anxiety. And I am a huge believer in, and I'm sure you all are as well, mental health is so important. And if you literally, your mental health is struggling because the very thought of doing something, then don't do that. Like, you are more than capable of saying I don't want to do this because it is affecting me in such a negative way. Now, explaining it to your parents is one thing. I come from a background where when I told my mom I was gay, she told me I was going to hell and we didn't talk for 3 months. And I lived in their house. So that was awkward. So it's the idea behind getting your parents to sort of come around. It's a process, and I'm sure you're experiencing that. And I truly believe at this point in time, it is going to be more beneficial for you to spread your wings further and fly on your own than to go home and cement yourself down into a culture that isn't accepting, into a family that isn't fully accepting, and into a state. Missouri is not accepting. You need to just spread your wings and fly in a community and a culture that is going to love you for who you are. And your family may come around, they may not, but you will surround yourself with people that love you no matter what in the place where you're at. And I think that's super important to remember.
Right, your mental health is more important than their comfort.
Absolutely.
Stace?
I think it's two separate issues. I think that the politics thing and the sexuality thing is two separate things. So as far as being you, I think that you need to give your parents at least one last chance. I think that you should go home and you should say, listen, I'm so stressed out coming home because I can't be myself. This has to stop. You need to have boundaries. You need to have that out in the open and tell them, I need to be me. If you don't accept me for who I am, then we're going to keep our visits short and sweet. Only sometimes around the holidays, it's not going to be, you know, a normal parent-child relationship. If that's what you want, then okay. You know, and then you have to be okay with their answer. They may say, okay, let's work on this slowly, you know, like bring your partner around for the holidays. Like, let's slowly, you know, adjust to this. Or they may say, we don't accept it. Sorry. And you're not going to come home next holiday. Be ready for either one, but I think you need to give them a chance and lay it all out there and say, this is how you feel. You need to be honest and say, I'm going to be me in front of you guys, period. Like, ready or not. The politics thing, coming from somebody that has both sides of politics in my family, that's a totally separate issue. If you are a Democrat and they're Republican, you just have to have a no politics at the dinner table rule. That's what we do. We have to just say, we can talk about other stuff. We don't have to talk about the president or policies. We can talk about anything else, but you just have to say, like, we're not going to bring it up just to save relationships. And it just is what it is. Save those conversations for your friends, you know, but to save relationships and families, you just have to say no politics at the dinner table.
Being an adult is hard. It's hard. There's a lot of shitty stuff that you have to figure out and deal with. I think one of the hardest transitions for both kids and parents is, you realizing that you are your own person. You don't belong to them. They don't own you. And them coming to the grips with the fact that they can't control what you do. You weren't put on this earth to serve their whims or their needs or their beliefs or anything of that nature. You are who you are. And that's a hard lesson to learn. I personally went through it, and I'm only giving this anecdote because I went through something similar with that you're kind of going through. It was a little bit later. It was after college, but my father wasn't fully accepting of who I was. And when I did come out to him, he didn't talk to me for almost 6 years. And, we're better now. We're doing much better, but it took kind of my absence from his life, and him missing a lot of really important things that happened to me to kind of get over his, I wouldn't call it homophobia, but, because of his religious beliefs, his disapproval of what I do. And I guess to an extent that's homophobia, but, he was never rude to me or hateful to me. He just didn't want anything. He wanted me to not share that part of my life with him. And I told him, you either get all of me or you get none of me, because I'm not going to pick and choose what I share with you for your comfort level, because I'm a grown up. So if you want to give your parents another chance, I would tell them, and I would really think this through beforehand. I do well with lists, making lists of things that not only that you expect from them, but that you need from them. And I would tell them, if this goes sideways, I'm going back to San Diego. I'm not spending the summer here with you. I'm going back to be with my girlfriend. I'm assuming it's a girlfriend. It may not be, but I'm going back to be with the people that love me and accept me. And so put the choice on them. If they want to treat you like a child, and you're an adult, then behave like an adult and make that adult decision. I agree with Aaron. Mental health is incredibly important, and it can feel really isolating and confining and scary, to be in a situation where you don't feel loved and accepted. And if you're already having panic attacks, the thought of going home, maybe you should pick a 2 weeks out of the summer that you're going to go home, and it's not even the whole, so like have that already planned, or ask them to come out and see you, or cause mental health is really important. But being an adult, it's fucking hard, man. And especially if you're a queer adult, you're going to deal with people that don't accept you and don't understand you consistently. And I wish it wasn't like that. And I wish your family was at least like a soft place that you could land and you wouldn't feel like that. But it seems like right now they're not. So find those people who are, and trust your instincts. We know one paragraph about your parents. Like you know what to expect. You know how they're going to react, and you need to take care of yourself. Yep. Because adulting. Fucking adulting, man. And plus, who wants to leave San Diego in the summertime to go to Missouri? Like, stay in San Diego, bro. get you a season pass to Legoland and stay your ass down there.
For your senior year, people don't go home. It's okay.
And you also have to be, I don't know your financial situation, if your parents are sending you money or how it's going, but it could come to the point where they cut you off too. So you have to be prepared for all those things. I wish you didn't have to be. I wish that wasn't the world we lived in, but it is. Okay, last question. I think I've developed feelings for my best friend's girlfriend. They're always breaking up and getting back together. Their relationship is chaotic and always on the rocks. They're currently broken up, but I know they'll get back together. They've been doing this for a year now. My best friend is difficult, to say the least, and it's hard to watch. I think the feelings are reciprocated. The girlfriend is always coming to me when things go wrong, coming over to cry and texting me. She says things like, I wish she was more like you. My best friend and I have been friends since childhood, so I don't want to lose her, but I don't know what to do.
So, first of all, that's rough. That's real rough. I personally am happy I'm not in your position, but this is one thing I can tell you. It is so difficult to be around someone that you're attracted to that constantly tells you how much better you are than the person they're with. And in that circumstance, I almost feel like it may be beneficial for you to have a conversation with the girl you're attracted to, because it's going to be difficult to have a conversation with your best friend, because your best friend's going to be like, how the hell do you even know we're having issues? Like, aside from us breaking up and getting back together, is she talking to you? Da, da, da. Like, you don't know for sure what your best friend's going to do, and you don't want to lose that friendship, but it is insanely unfair for this girl to continue to tell you how amazing you are, but never give you the opportunity. So I think a conversation in the sense that, so you need to talk to XYZ, whatever your best friend's name is, Jezebel. You need to talk to Jezebel.
Fancy.
And you need to figure this out, because I cannot stand to watch either one of you be unhappy anymore. And this relationship may not be for either one of you, because if you can't figure it out and you keep breaking up and getting back together and breaking up, then maybe this isn't what you need in your life. And, you know, I'm more than happy to help you find something in the future that would be exactly what you need in your life. But you need to figure this out. And it's not good for either one of you. And it's certainly not good for you to continue to go through this and to continue to see this, and then to pine day after day for someone that you're not going to have for a really long time, it sounds, unless someone gets the courage to break it off completely. It's hard, and it's, you have to separate your heart from this conversation. Like, you have to, because it is going to be hard. It's going to be very, very difficult. And I really truly think that having the conversation with the girl that you're attracted to, it's going to help in the sense that you may see things in this conversation that either you can help with, or that you can say, like, you know, I really think that you need to lay this out to Jezebel. Like, Jezebel needs to know that you're unhappy with this. Jezebel needs to know that you aren't, you know, happy with where this is going in your life. And maybe that will help them. And maybe you'll lose this person forever. But like we've said in previous talks, if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And it's unfortunate. And it's the hardest lesson we've ever learned in our lives, is when you fall for someone and then it's not meant to be. Like, it's hard. It's very, very difficult. It's one of the biggest heartbreaks in our life, I feel. And that may really, really suck. And I'm sorry. And I apologize in advance for this shitty advice. But I truly, truly think that this is the only way about it. Because at the end of the day, you are going to either win or lose. And if you lose, then maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay, because you will win with someone else. And I think that that's it's so hard to get that, though. It's so hard. And I'm so sorry. And I feel so bad for you, because I've been there, and it's not easy. I mean, I got the girl in the end. What are you going to do? So, it's not going to work for you.
Stace?
I think I would normally start off by saying you need to decide how good of a best friend this is. I mean, if you're like, oh, it's just an acquaintance, I would rather pursue the girlfriend, then that's your decision. But it sounds like this is like your BFF, you know, which you need to play out what would happen. So if you decided that, like, you know what, I have to take a chance, this is my soulmate, play it out. Okay. So you pursue the girlfriend and she likes you too. So you end up together, you're going to lose your best friend. Like that.
And all the friends that you guys have together. Yeah, there will be a major divorce.
Or you tell your best friend, hey, I'm super attracted to your girlfriend. I don't know what to do because it's hard. Your best friend could be like, wow, okay, well, we're not going to hang out with you anymore because that's awkward. You know, you need to play out all the scenarios in your head. I think I'm trying to picture myself in the situation as the person attracted to somebody's like spouse or, you know, significant other, or as the person, you know, the best friend. And so I'm trying to play it out what I would want to happen and how I would handle it. And I think the girlfriend coming to you and saying you're a better person than her significant other is real bitchy and low and not cool. So I wouldn't want to be with that person because they sound real immature. So if I were in this situation, I would distance myself. I would tell the girlfriend, I'm sorry, but we can't have these conversations anymore. It's inappropriate. I value my best friend too much to keep this going on. And then you need to just not be around that person you're attracted to. If they're trying to like go to the movies and you're like the third wheel, just say I'm busy that night, whatever. And just hang out with your best friend, you and your best friend alone, and just distance yourself from that person. And hopefully, you know what, it sounds like they're off and on. Hopefully they'll be off someday and you can just forget about her and you still have your best friend. So that's my advice.
Yeah, I agree with Stacey. If this was just a friend, it's one thing, but it's your best friend, that's something really different. And I think it affects it in multiple ways. I've been in this situation with the same person two times, the same significant other, not the same best friend, two best friends, but the same, dated all of our friends.
Fucking Jezebel.
I know. That's actually really accurate. But I think that there's a lot that comes with that. And I think that probably my answer to this question when I was 25 would be different than my answer now would be. And so I think obviously if this is your best friend, then like, nothing can happen while these two are still dating. And that's the scenario that I was in too, where it was very much understood that like, clearly nothing, like I, like you said, give them some space, give them some distance. Like you don't need to be involved in any of that. Once they're not together anymore and there's been some like separation and some hindsight, I was definitely in a position where like that conversation had to come up with my best friend. And it was a little awkward of like, hey, no, like, I definitely think I have feelings for your ex-boyfriend. But when you're all, when they're still friends and you're all hanging out in a group setting, like they see that I just feel like the older you get, the more mature you get. You're like, yeah, whatever. Like our relationship's over. There's not anything like, yeah, you guys would probably make a better couple because we didn't fucking work. That clearly wasn't going anywhere. I think that distance and time and healing and sort of grieving that relationship after they break up gives you some more clarity. The other thing I will say too is that the age I am now, I think maybe I might have done things a little bit differently, just in the sense of like maybe having that conversation with my friend, especially when that relationship is petering out, to say like, hey, I want to be super honest. If you think that this could potentially go somewhere, if you think that potentially this person could be your soulmate, like you just are having those kind of feelings, that I think maybe you should be honest with your friend about, like, when that relationship peters out. I don't think much can be done until then, other than, you know, any good friend should be helping their friend along when they're in a relationship that's not going anywhere that they clearly shouldn't be in. And I know it's hard because no one ever wants to listen when they're in love, but it sounds like they're miserable. I also agree with Stacey with the, you know, if she's saying things like you're a better person than her, and she's kind of talking shit about your best friend, like, nope, sorry, game over, I'm not interested. But if the conversations are more along the lines, like, I feel a deeper connection with you, and I feel like if this person's your best friend, I think just at the age I am now, if I try and put myself in the situation of your best friend, like, I knew when you're in a relationship that's not working out, not going anywhere, you fucking know it. Even though you're in denial about it sometimes and you don't want it to end because it's convenient and it's comfortable and you don't want to be alone, whatever the reasons are, you know it's not good. And so I think a lot of times when you're in those relationships, you delay the inevitable because it's just so much work and so uncomfortable to have to like end a relationship. But you see it and you know that it's happening. And so I think if that's a situation where you're both kind of, you know, agreeing that this isn't working, like why is, if this girl, I'm sorry, I'm taking a long pass, but I'm working this out in my head a little bit. If this girl is that invested in thinking you guys have a future, I don't understand why she hasn't broken up with your best friend yet. Like I guess that's the point that I'm getting to, because most of these relationships were like, once I started to notice that there was like something between me and this person, it was already like that relationship was already ending. So I think it made things a lot clearer that like, okay, I'm going to give them some space. I'm going to give it a couple months. If this is still feels like it's a thing, then I'm going to talk to her about it first. Once I can determine that like, yeah, I think these are like real feelings and not just we're flirty or whatever. But that person who I was in that situation with had enough respect for my best friend that to end the relationship when they knew it was over, and they ended up still being able to be friends. So I just feel like this girl, if she's dragging out that, like, what's the point of dragging out this relationship with your best friend while also trying to come at you? Like if the relationship's over, it's over. It needs to run its course. And if it's not, then I think you need to, you know,
is she coming at her though?
Well, okay. So there's, first of all, there's red flags fucking flying all over this thing. Okay. Like red flag, red flag, red flag. First of all, you said right here, this relationship is chaotic and always on the rocks. You need to take a real good look in the mirror, my friend, and wonder why. Yeah. So this person is enjoying being in a relationship that is this tumultuous. You're not just talking about a relationship that has been like slowly on the decline and it's kind of like, I don't know, things just didn't work out, we've run its course, like Stacey was saying. And I think it's a little bit different situation than Aaron was in too, because like things just weren't working out between them and neither one of them had just admitted it yet. They're clearly at each other's throats all the fucking time. So this girl's a little bit addicted to the chaos and the drama, just like your best friend appears to be, which you can be okay with that with your best friend because you love them anyway and you're not dating them. So fucking whatever. Right. But if this girl is coming behind your best friend's back and saying things like, I wish she was more like you, that bitch is trying to make your best friend jealous. She's trying to form a relationship with you to piss off the best friend because she likes the chaos. To some extent, she does. And that could mean that she likes being with someone who is chaotic, because people who are chaotic will focus all of their attention on you and make you the center of their universe. I dated one for 5 years. Believe me when I tell you this. They will make the world revolve around you until they fucking don't. So this girl likes the chaos a little bit. And I would just, look, you got to watch out for your heart. And
is that crazy train you want
to
jump
aboard? If she's coming to you and saying, I wish she was more like you, but she hasn't left her, she's not going to. And she's testing the waters with you to see if there's potentially something better out there. And you don't need someone in your life who's looking at you as the grass is greener on the other side, because she'll do it to you too. So all I'm saying is, and if I were you, and just like Stacey, my answer would have been very different at 25 than it's going to be now at 38. You need to take yourself out of the situation, because you don't want to be blamed when this relationship does blow up in everyone's face and say that you had anything to do with it. And two, depending on how close you are with your best friend, I mean, I can't imagine any of my best friend's significant others coming at me and saying things like that, and I wouldn't be telling them. That's just me. I'd be on the phone right away being like, this motherfucker, you will not believe what he just said.
Yeah, I really think even like my situation, I feel like it had run its course, but because they still really cared about each other, which is what lended itself to them still being able to be friends afterwards, it was pretty tumultuous.
That's you. That's not her. That's not what's going on here.
I'm just saying like that's the situation. But ultimately, like regardless of how it ends, I know people that are so great apart, and then you put them together and you're like, what sort of fucking sorcery happens that you both turn into crazy people together? Because that's just what happens. So if that is like the off chance that is the situation, that, you know, it's just they bring out the worst in each other, then yeah, let him break up, let him have some time. And then I just feel like at my age now, if I had to come to one of my friends and be like, hey, I really have super strong feelings for your ex, we've never done anything, like I've never acted on them because I really respect our friendship and I love you and I respect, well, I'm at an age where I can't fuck around so much anymore that if I feel like there's a potential for something super serious there, then I'm gonna be honest about that and hoping that if things, again, they ended on their own accord and we've had some time and some space and stuff, that my friend would be.
The other thing too, you got to remember, because I was in this situation and I made the wrong decision. I ended up with my friend's girlfriend. I made the wrong decision, but it causes so much turmoil in your friendship life that I'm going to tell you, there ends up being divorce of friendships and like people pick sides and all this stuff. And it almost puts you in the situation where you have better been damn sure about this person because you lost everything else. Right. So you need to decide, is this girl worth blowing up your whole, and maybe she is, I don't know, but this situation is going to blow up your whole fucking life. And it almost puts you in a situation where you feel like you have to make it work because you risked everything on it.
I honestly feel like if the girl was really worth all of that though, like wouldn't the best friend know that too?
Well, just because she's right for someone doesn't mean she's right for everyone.
I just need more information. Right. Can we get someone to come in here and just give us some more
We need follow-ups. Email us back.
I'm so hung up on the fact that she goes to her, the girlfriend comes to her and says, you're so much better, da da da. Like, I am so upset by that.
It's very attention-seeking.
It super is. And if you're in a shitty relationship, why are they still in it? Yeah. Yes.
It's so narcissistic. It's like they want to place the blame on this other person instead of like owning up to their own shortcomings. Like, I just feel so bad. Like, that's why I was like so like torn. Like, I'm so sorry this is happening to you, because I've been there. I've had someone come to me and say like, you do everything right. And like, you're this and you're that. And then fuck you over in the end. And like, that's not okay. And like, it's just like, that's why you sit this woman down and say, look, motherfucker, you need to figure your shit out. Like, I am done. Like, you need to get back together with my best friend or break it the fuck off, because I can't deal with this anymore.
Because here's the thing. I don't see any scenario that is successful if you are the reason that they break up.
It's a lose-lose all the way around.
It's a lose-lose. If they break up on their own and then things happen in the future, I think you can be mature and talk about your feelings, your friend cares about you, blah, 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 whatever.
Yeah, well, all but lesbians say to each other, it's fine.
If you're involved in the demise of that relationship, or it's even appears as though you are, because it sounds like that relationship's fucking over anyways, it's never going to be successful.
All right. What's everyone obsessed with this week?
Okay, so I said on the last episode that I was going to do every week updates with my surgery until I have the surgery. So I got the packet in the mail. I went over it, and it talks about, like, what to wear and what's going to happen, like, whatever, before my pre-op. So my pre-op is where I get to tour the hospital and I find out, like, where I'm going to go and where to check in, and they do all these labs and, like, whatever. So the only thing that was kind of a red flag on the packet I got right now is that it said, if you've been sick in 2 weeks before your surgery, let us know right away, because that's really important. Because, like, you know, you get the tube down your throat, and if you have, like, a cough and, like, infection and blah, blah, blah. So I was like, cool, whatever, toss the packet aside, and then I got my daughter's cold. So I'm a little nervous. We're still, like, 3 weeks out, so probably okay, but I'm really hoping this cold doesn't turn into a nasty cough thing and me having to reschedule, because that would really suck. So
I'm so jealous, because you have in-person pre-op appointments. Both of my pre-op appointments were on the phone.
Oh yeah, I actually have an appointment in the morning with my GYN, who is actually doing the surgery himself. That's fantastic. Cool. He's my GYN and the surgeon, and he has a partner that is also a surgeon that he's working with. So there's two people. So I have an appointment with him in the morning, and he does my lab work and he answers my long list of questions. And then I go straight from there to the main hospital, which is like 10 minutes away, and I get to tour the hospital, and then they talk about all the stuff there about like the procedure. I talk to the anesthesiologist and like ask him questions, and I get to meet the like crew or whatever and like all that. So it's like an all day freaking thing. So,
is it inpatient?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Cause I just like the one thing that's cool, and I don't know, I could probably send it to you cause I don't know if you have, cause I know you don't have Kaiser anymore, but one of the things they sent me, which I thought was so cool, they sent to like all their like pre-op patients, is all of this stuff about like, mindfulness, like all these videos you can watch about like calming down and how it's like normal to be nervous before surgery, and these different like guided meditations and stuff that you could do like to try and calm your nerves a little bit. And I thought that was like a really cool way of doing it instead of
take
this pill.
I was surprised because it's been eight years since I had my tubes tied. So that was my last surgery. And like switching insurance all together, so I have all new hospitals and stuff now. Right. I'm really like, I've hated my insurance since we switched, but I'm very impressed with what's been going on in the last week or two. So they sent me like 12 videos, and I had to watch one to be able to watch the next one.
Yeah,
they were really cool, really informative, very like even down to like your support system at home, this is what you need to have, you know, and just like what to expect. And they walk you through the surgery itself with like a little like cartoon. It was crazy. But so yeah, I'm actually, so far, I'm very impressed with how they've been handling it. So I'm pretty comfortable.
That's really good. Cool. That's,
I just really remember cool. feeling like it makes you feel so much better when the doctors are like understanding. Like I have a lot of anxiety about stuff like that, and it was just little things like the anesthesiologist like sending me a message a couple days before my surgery, just here's what we're going to do if you have any questions. Cause it's scary. Yeah. The idea of having a tube put down your throat and like being put out, and you wake up and you're like all hoarse and your neck hurts and stuff. And like, it's just a weird situation. Cause I know my biggest fear was like, God, what if they put me out and I don't wake up? Like that was my or what if I wake up during surgery? That was my other irrational fear.
That was one of the videos.
Yeah. They made me so comfortable with it. And I remember waking up and like after surgery, and I was so afraid that it was still going on that I woke up and I opened my eye like one at a time, and I made eye contact with the nurse, and I was like, am I allowed to be awake right now? And she's like, yeah, sure, or not, whatever. Like, but it's just nice when you get people that have good bedside manner. Like my doctors did my surgery too, and it just makes you feel so much better about like,
totally,
like I can ask all the irrational questions I want. And by the second one, I like went straight in, didn't have any anxiety, nothing. But like the first one, I was like on the verge of panic attacks because I had never had surgery before. Like, it's a lot.
I think my first surgery, when I had my tubes tied and I had the big fibroid taken out, it was a double surgery. I didn't know a lot of stuff. Like I said, I had a different insurance company. They didn't tell me I would have the tube down my throat. So number one, they put me under and they said, okay, count backwards from 10. And I was on like, okay, 10, 9, 8. And my heart started racing really bad from the medicine. And I was like, that's not good. And then I was asleep. And so like when I woke up, I was like, yo, like that was crazy. And nobody talked to me about the machines like beeping because I have high blood pressure. Yeah. So nobody talked to me about the machines going crazy or anything. They were like, it was great. Okay, you're all set. And I was like, and then my throat hurt really bad. And I was like, why is my throat hurt? Can I have some water? And they were like, oh yeah, when you pull the tube out, it hurts. And I was like, I had a tube down my throat. Like they were so distant that I feel so much more comfortable with this whole procedure. Because they're walking me through so much more stuff and like, and it's just so much better. So much better.
I remember having like the same, I had the same.
We're not laughing at Stacey. Kai just came in and took a sip of her terrible wine and made it for me.
His face was priceless.
I just remember like my second surgery, I had the exact same nurse and she recognized me, and she was so, I think she felt so bad for me that I was having a second surgery in 11 months, but she was so nice. Like she did little things like I was like, I'm super cold. Like, do you have a blanket or something? She brought me some of the like mesh hospital underwear, which is super nice because I was having surgery on my foot and you still have to be butt ass naked. And you know how it is. You catch a draft. And you're like, oh, she brought me, I didn't even ask. She brought me socks to wear like beforehand, and you know, on my foot that they weren't doing the surgery on, like, until I had to go in. She brought me mesh underwear. She brought me one of those, the blankets where they pump all the hot air into it and stuff. She was so nice. And when she brought me the underwear, she's like, you can, there's no reason that you don't need to have these on. Like, just that little bit of like privacy was so nice. I don't even remember. I remember going in and having like my doctor, who was my surgeon, he was, he always had interns and stuff. So there being like an anesthetist and anesthesiologist as somebody interning him, plus my surgeon, plus the other doctor, plus another, like, hell of people, and just being like, are they all here for me? And then I don't remember anything else after that. Like, it's such a weird thing to like have several hours go by and not be aware of it. Like, I didn't know I would wake up with a cast, and they shouldn't have had to tell me that, because like a normal person would be like, you're gonna have surgery on your foot, they're gonna put a fucking cast on it. But I was like, when did they do that? Like, it's just a weird, I'm glad you feel comfortable, because it's scary.
Several hours of not remembering, that's like me being drunk.
Yeah, it's scary, it's intense, but so I'm hoping that this little bit of a cold that I have goes away and it's all good. My pre-op's the 5th or 6th, I think it's the 6th, so I have until then to get over this little cold. So,
and sometimes that's what I'm obsessed with. I want you to tell them, like, hey, I have a little cold, for them to, like, check you out or whatever, and then if they're like, oh, it's just a little cold, it's not a big deal, but if they're like, oh, she's got, you know.
Do you take emergency?
Like vitamin C.
The vitamin C packet.
Yep. Okay, we have like a ton here. Right, my kids are like, Mom, really? But they like the taste. They're honestly, like, it doesn't work. And I'm like, no, it does.
It absolutely works. Like, I am I'm a full believer in it. Anytime anyone in this house gets sick, it's emergency. Like, before, during, after, all the time, anytime.
It can't hurt.
You want to put it in with vodka, do it.
You don't just spray them all with candle Lysol like Jackie used to do at work.
I do my doorknobs. I do.
So bad. Yeah. Not just their whole workspace, but also their...
Well, stop coming in and breathing in my fucking cubicle with your plague, assholes. I don't want to be sick.
Me, but it was one of the favorite things that ever happened. Was I watched Jackie Lysol, a human being.
I'm just saying, don't fucking come up in my space with your germs.
You do get sick. You're pretty, like, when you get sick, you're down for the count.
Yeah, when I get sick, I'm sick. So I don't want to be sick. All right, Stacey, what do you got going on?
All right,
I'm limiting your time, bro.
I started listening to a new podcast, and it's called My Dad Wrote a Porno. And holy shit, it is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my lifetime. So it's this British guy who's father legit wrote like a piece of erotic fiction, and now there's 4 seasons, so he has written 4 books. He is not an author. They are the worst things in the world, and it's his son reading them with his friends and just kind of making fun of it and being uncomfortable that his dad wrote this, which is super funny because his friends sometimes are like, does your dad do a lot of research on these things? Like, is he on the internet or is he speaking from experience? The words he chooses to use to describe some of the acts in this book called Belinda Blinks, which, like, they can't even, there's like, it's like his male friend and his female friend that do like the podcast with him, and the poor girl, every, like, he can't even get through a sentence and she's like, no, stop, wait, we go back, what did he say? Like, the way he tries to describe breasts, he literally says at one point that they fell out of her shirt. Like, oh my God, what was it? They fell out of her shirt like pomegranate. Pomegranates. He tries to describe boobs as pomegranates. Also, Belinda is like the least sexy name that's ever happened. And the whole time, they're like,
Belinda's.
The girl's like, does she think blinking is winking? Like, what is sexy about blinking? And it's tagged on Amazon. It's obviously self-published. and there's like romance and erotica and business and leadership.
Business and leadership.
The first book takes place in like a business environment. I swear to God, there was an entire chapter they got to where there was no sex. It all was just like, where do we build the cars to pick up the people from the airport? Like, it's all business and nothing happening. And it is so funny. Like, there's a, for whatever reason, she has to like get naked. I mean, it's like the dumbest shit you've ever heard in a lifetime. Like, she's interviewing for a job and they have to inspect her body. But the way he's describing things, like, It is, I've been listening to it and like nonstop just laughing, crying. And I don't know if you guys would appreciate it the same way as I do, because you do write, if you would feel bad that they're like making fun of this guy. But the fact that it's his dad is that like it gives him license to fully.
I don't feel bad about that.
Imagine if your mom was to be like, I'm going to write a piece of erotic.
Oh, please do not, mom. Please do not.
I want to be very clear. It's not a romance novel. It's like legit every scene is just like they strap her up and rip off all her clothes in a maze and all these guys come in and fuck her. Like, it's so ridiculously ridiculously graphic. But at the same time, like, he's just so bad at it. It is the funniest stuff I've ever seen. I saw it was in like the top episodes or the top shows like on the podcast, the Apple Podcast app. But they also have a live, they found like a, you know, extra scene or deleted scene or something. And so there's a Netflix special and they have actors come on and stuff and they're like acting it out. It is so funny. So I highly recommend it. I'm so obsessed with it. I can't even put it on. It's obviously super graphic. There's lots of like, oh, he refers to like her clit all the time. And so now they have drinking games. Like if he says the word clit, Belinda blinks. Or if like any of these things happen, they have to take a shot. Anytime a new character is introduced, which I swear to God, he's using like a name generator. They're the worst names that have ever been written. Highly recommend. The episodes are only like, they're less than 30 minutes. And it is so funny. But I really want, especially you, Jackie and Aaron, to listen to it like as authors. I think you'll think this is ridiculous.
I'll probably go, oh my god, I can't, if your family's home,
it's so bad.
Can't wait to read about men's throbbing members. And...
Oh no, it's not even just men. She's clearly bi. She's fucking ladies. She's fucking guys. She fucks a guy with a micro penis.
Oh, what? That's up.
And it's so many.
That's like, a niche market, huh?
The continuity is so terrible. This guy like drives her to a maze because you know England and like. Ties her up, but like ties her up with a rope to the like handcuff so she can still get dressed on and off. And the men are like, thank you for being practical and not wearing a thong. Like, wait, what does that even mean? Why is that practical? The men are all coming in and thought it is the weirdest shit I've ever read, but it or listened to, but it is so funny because they just like they tear this book apart and it's so funny because it's his dad.
All right.
Larry.
Aaron, what are you obsessed with?
So because Game of Thrones is, oh my God. My gray rock is good.
Swords and swords!
And Daenerys Targaryen. So since that ended, I have been sort of like in, I don't want to say a depression because I'm really like, dramatic.
What are you supposed to watch now?
Well, that's just it. Like I seriously, after it ended, you know, like we've talked and I've been like in a sort of a rut and it's been sort of like wah, wah. So I started thinking about past shows that I've loved that have ended. And like a couple of them have ended because it had run their course. Like, unfortunately, The Golden Girls ran its course and it ended, but it's a classic. And like, I've been watching episodes, you know, during the day, like in my quiet time at work, I'll just put it on. So it's in the background noise, whatever. Like, and I laugh. One of the shows that I just recently became obsessed with again, My So-Called Life. I don't know if you guys have ever seen My So-Called Life.
Oh my God.
I started watching it from like episode one. Okay, so if no one knows about My So-Called Life, so it was back like I was 15, so like 95, right?
Yeah. Is that,
Jesus Christ. So I was very, very young, and I literally remember every week sitting down with my mom and my two friends, and we would be like there. My friend Kelsey, my friend Amber, we would get together and watch the show every week, and it was so amazing, and it was so cool how they could take your high school thoughts and write them and make them real, and you were like, oh my God, like this is exactly what I thought, like oh my God, that's so exactly like what I thought, or something. Like, it was so perfect. Everything about it was perfectly written, perfectly cast, everything was wonderful. everything, directed, produced, all of it. I loved every second of it. And it ended season one after 19 episodes. And no one knows anything about what happened to Angela or Jordan or anyone. And I hate it.
Jordan Catalano, right?
Yes, Jordan Catalano. And like, I'm literally right back obsessed with these people that I remember so vividly from.
You're setting yourself up to be disappointed again because it's going to get cut off.
I know.
You're a little sadistic.
After disappointment. No, but seriously, like, I just feel like there's a lot. You know, I just recently, you know, like,
Veronica Mars. Watch Veronica Mars.
Do it. I will do it after this podcast.
Watch Veronica Mars.
June 1st, my next book comes out, Create a Life to Love, and it's all about, like, finding, you know, yourself in a different environment and, like, finding yourself in who you are and what are you going to do and how are you going to create your life to love. And, like, in my so-called life, it is so much that it's about finding yourself and, like, creating who you are and, like, being okay with who you are. And I just, as a high schooler, it was so important to me to see that on TV, so brilliantly portrayed. And it, just to see that, like, you can be who you are and not necessarily get bullied and not necessarily be someone that's, like, constantly looked down upon. And, you know, I grew up being bullied. And, like, even as an adult, I find myself feeling like I'm being bullied. So it's...
Oh, we'll kick their ass. You just tell us.
Over, man.
I'm kidding. I don't know how to fight, but I'll be real bitchy.
I totally could see that. Jackie and I would be like, yeah!
Like, I can't punch her, but did you see her eyebrows?
They were so whack. No, but I just have been obsessed again with watching it. Like, I've gotten through, you know, like, 6 episodes in 6 hours today. I don't know.
But I think it's that's so important, too, because I feel like with teenagers, like, you don't want to hear from your parents because they're dumb. They don't understand. Like, it's so important for teenagers, especially to have, like, especially young, well, anybody, any young person, to have something
and
they
I feel like it's
with.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I feel like, too, like, one of the things that I really enjoy about the season, the 19 episodes, is that Angela, the main character, comes to know her parents in such a different way. You know, and, like, all see her parents as these people, you know, that have raised us and done whatever, and we either hate them or we love them or we like them or we love them. You know what I mean? We're always at odds with our parents, and to see that they have lives and she gets to witness this and witness what's going on within their lives, I think it's just, it's brilliant. I love the show. It's only 19 episodes. It's amazing. I'm sorry that it's so lame that I'm obsessed with it again, but I really am. I just am. Anyways, that's it. Thank you.
That ended too early and Freaks and Geeks.
Freaks and Geeks was amazing.
It's so good, and it's a freaking crime that was only one season.
Are you watching Dead to Me now?
Yeah,
no,
I am.
Not yet, but that's
so good.
That main character is the girl, the main character from Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, Linda Cardellini, right?
Yeah, she was on ER.
Yeah.
Okay.
She was.
Today, or this week, I am going to do Obsessed With. Today would have been Harvey Milk's 89th birthday. And for those that aren't familiar with Harvey Milk, he was one of the first openly gay politicians in the country, and he was a supervisor for San Francisco. He was the president of the Board of Supervisors. He wasn't president. He was a Board of Supervisors. And him and Mayor Moscone, George Moscone, were assassinated in 1978 by Dan White, who was another supervisor, and that's where, like, the whole junk food argument came from. Anyway, he died at 48 years old, and I wanted to go through 10 things about Harvey Milk, and just because he was so important to the LGBTQ community. Some of you may know the stuff about him, some of you may not, so it's going to take me a little bit longer, so sorry, but so in 2009, President Obama actually awarded him the Presidential Medal of Freedom, and he said his name was Harvey Milk, and he was here to recruit us, all of us, to join a movement and change a nation. In the brief time in which he spoke and ran and led, his voice stirred the aspirations of millions of people. The second one is his yearbook quote. Harvey Milk's yearbook quote actually read, "And they say women are never at a loss for words." Milt graduated from Bayshore High School in Bayshore, New York in 1947, but he didn't come out as gay until he was 40 years old. The first street named after Harvey Milk was in 2012, and it was a street in San Diego, was the first to have the honor, and Portland, Oregon, and Salt Lake City, Utah followed suit. San Francisco has named several locations after him, including Harvey Milk Plaza, where Market and Castro Streets intersect. The Navy actually named a shift after him also. So decades before the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, 21-year-old Milk was a diving instructor at a Navy base in San Diego. His mother, Minerva Kearns, also served the Navy and fought for more opportunities for women in the military. In 2016, Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus announced a military sealift commander fleet oiler was being christened as a USNS Harvey Milk. And he said, it will further send a green light that honesty, acceptance, and authenticity are held up among the highest ideals of our military. The Jonestown Massacre occurred 10 days before Milk's death. People's Temple leader Jim Jones actually led the housing authority for Mayor Moscone before fleeing to Guana through Milk, though Milk made it clear he didn't trust the charismatic demagogue. Days before murdering Milk and Moscone, Dan White resigned and then quickly asked for his job back. The press had a field day until the Jonestown Massacre grabbed everyone's attention. White reportedly told his aides, "You see that? One day I'm on the front page and the next day I'm swept right off." Harvey got Jane Fonda to help him bring down the Briggs Initiative, and that was in 1977. The 1977 measure would have banned homosexuals from being public school teachers in California, but thanks to Milk's tireless efforts and celebrity backing from Fonda and others, it was soundly defeated. The Briggs Initiative also sparked thousands of gay and lesbians to come out to their friends and family, marking the first time America learned we were indeed everywhere. We have Broadway's Hair to thank for Harvey coming to San Francisco. And in the late 1960s, Milk was a producer of several New York productions, including Hair and Jesus Christ Superstar. While on tour with the cast of Hair in San Francisco, he fell in love with the city and moved there in 1972. Robin Williams was originally in talks to play Harvey Milk. Milk was originally greenlit in 1991 with Oliver Stone as an executive producer. In 92, Van Sant signed on with Williams set to star. 16 years later, the role went to Sean Penn. The U.S. Post Office issued a Harvey Milk stamp. It was issued on May 22nd, 2014. It celebrated internationally as Harvey Milk Day. Harvey predicted his own assassination. Facing death threats every day, Milk recorded several versions of his will to be read on the event of my assassinations, he said. On one tape, he prophesied, "If a bullet should ever enter my brain, let that bullet destroy every closet door." And some of his most famous quotes, besides that one, "If a bullet should ever enter my brain, let that bullet destroy every closet door," he's also quoted as saying, "Hope will never be silent. And more people have been slaughtered in the name of religion than any other single reason. That, my friends, is true perversion." So it's just a good reminder sometimes of the people that came before us that made it possible to have the freedoms that we have now. And Harvey Milk is a great example. He was taken from us too soon. But I'm glad. It makes me happy that he's been so embraced so internationally through the years. So just wanted to give a shout out to Harvey Milk, who would have been 89 years old today and who would have been real pissed about the state of the country.
Hell yeah.
Just saying.
I didn't even know he was that old.
Yeah.
Would have been that. I didn't know it was that long ago is what I should have said.
I didn't realize that movie was greenlit so far before it actually got made.
Yeah. I didn't know that either. That's
that movie
crazy.
Is really, really good.
Yeah,
Sean Penn does a great job in that movie.
Yeah.
How's everyone? Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say along the same lines because it was my other I'm obsessed with thing this week, and the other one was way funnier. But I know I sent you guys the stuff like all of the merch that Disney has for Pride. Like, it's so great because you would think like all of those organizations that claim to be about families and stuff. It just makes me so happy that Disney is so inclusive and that they like. Put out an entire line of merchandise like for Pride, and it's so amazing to be able to go there and see, you know, just see families and of all kinds of families and stuff, and with their pride, like it makes me so happy. So Keith Disney wants to sponsor us. We really appreciate the fact that you
sure.
If you want to start paying for me and Aaron's APs, we would really
appreciate
it.
All right.
Can I say one thing? This is just in the lines of like Disney being inclusive, like on the Disney World annual pass holder Facebook, there was actually a picture of these two guys kissing, and like they said in the thing, like, blah blah, don't judge, you know, da da da. And like every comment was nice. Yeah.
All the Disney wedding stuff, there's so usually a same sex couple in there. Like, it just makes me happy, because if, you know, Disney 100% has the potential to not be inclusive of all different kinds of family structures, and with lots of, you know, pressure from fucking lunatics. And so it just makes me happy that they.
You know who else has like a ton of gay characters and just LGBT characters altogether is Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sure. Well, and Arthur. Arthur the cartoon. Arthur is he
Arthur? Alabama won't even air the episode.
Oh my gosh, I love fuck Alabama.
Can we cancel Alabama?
What? Give me the petition. Let's build a wall around Alabama. All right.
I didn't like the card. Alabama's still a thing.
Right around Alabama. That would be so much cheaper.
10 words or less. How was your wine?
Sticky.
That's not good.
I don't like that at all.
Would ice have helped?
Probably, yeah.
You need like
water it down a lot.
20 pounds of ice. You need an aperitif. You need a palate cleanser at this point.
Stacey, how was your wine? Yeah.
Mine was great. I have no complaints. I like it. The only thing that was weird about it was the tasting notes.
Aaron?
Mine was delicious, and I will buy another bottle the next time I'm at Total Wine.
I'm sticking with my, if the patriarchy tasted this good, people would be a lot more accepting of it.
I love it.
All right, so that is it for us this week, episode 99 of the Weekly Wine Down. We'll do something fun for the 100th. We haven't decided yet. We'll let you know. Yeah. But thanks for joining us, and everybody have a great weekend. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.